Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Under the Hoodies. This is Bill Kegel. I am joined by no one quite yet. We have Brian Shipley on the line. Actually, he just came through. Let me get him going here. Brian, what's happening, buddy?
Bill, how's it going today?
Oh, not bad, not bad. Good to hear your voice, man. It's been a while.
I know. It's been too long. It's been too long. About time we get a 2015 podcast on the board, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're just going to jump right into it, Brian. Deflated balls. We're not talking about that. No discussion whatsoever, because it's the dumbest thing you and I have ever heard of. We actually had a funny text exchange whether I asked you if you wanted to talk about deflated balls or if you wanted to talk about the WNBA draft. And you and I both agreed that Cheryl Swoops would be the number one player picked.
No doubt about it. We never specified whether it would be the 2015 draft, an all-time draft, a fantasy draft, or what. So I had to go with my girl Cheryl and my girl Shamika Holdsclaw, who I know I'm mispronouncing her name, but was a heck of a player back in the day at Tennessee.
Yeah, Rebecca Lobo, definitely a close third, though, for sure. But now let's talk about the Super Bowl from an X's and O's standpoint. You and I'm sure agree on this, because Brian and I don't do much show prep. It's just a quick text and we'll just rely on what I refer to us in the description as football geniuses. So X's and O's, Brian. I think that this game, if it's going to be won by Seattle, is going to be won at the line of scrimmage, because I'm not sure how solid the Patriots offensive line is compared to how good the not necessarily the defensive line of the Seattle Seahawks, but just their passers, their ability to gap at the quarterback with Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. I really think if they're going to win, that is how they're going to win, is they're going to control the line of scrimmage. I think they're going to have problems with Gronkowski. But, again, they have Cam Chancellor, who sort of matches up well with them. What do you think the keys to victory are, to be cliche, for Seattle to beat New England?
So for Seattle to beat New England, I would agree with you. I think they're going to have to set the tone on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. You know, for Seattle, really, you can fill in the blank with any team. It doesn't matter if they're playing New England, an arch rival like San Francisco, the Green Bay Packers, whomever. Their recipe is always the same. They don't mix things up. They don't do different things. What they do is they rely upon tremendous defense, short possessions, Russell Wilson making plays out of the pocket and in key situations, and a dominant running game led by, I'm here just so I want to get fined, Marshawn Lynch. So I think if they can just be themselves and do their thing and they play that style of game, then I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be the Seahawks back-to-back, first back-to-back champion since the Denver Broncos in the late 90s. You know, conversely, looking at the Patriots side, you know, I think the key maybe to beating Seattle is to challenge them vertically. I think the team that really played the best this year against Seattle was the Dallas Cowboys earlier in the season.
Yep.
I think one of the main reasons why was because they had two guys that you had to respect the deep threat for at all times. I think Terrence Williams is a terrific situational deep threat. And, of course, you know, it goes without saying the type of player that Dez Bryant is. Yeah, they got a lot of credit for being able to run against Seattle. But to me, what I thought the biggest issue was for the Denver in the Super Bowl last year was an inability to test them vertically. Because I think with those long corners, with, like you said, Cam Chancellor, where he can go where he's most comfortable, which is up in the box and not having to play deep. And, you know, with Earl Thomas back there to cover up mistakes in case someone does get open, you know, I think teams that don't challenge them vertically tend to have a lot of trouble, because the more you condense their defense, the better off they are. So the Patriots, I think, are going to have to take some shots downfield. Who's their downfield threat? Usually when you think of a downfield threat, you're thinking of a 4-3 wide receiver on the outside, a Mike Wallace prototype. But I think, to me, a key player that really could play a major role in the Super Bowl, kind of come out of nowhere and play a big role, is Shane Vereen. I think he might be their best situational deep threat. And as you said, if you have, you know, Gronkowski and Cam Chancellor, you know, maybe they could get Shane Vereen, who is almost you almost could call him half a wide receiver, because he's so good at running routes and catching passes and going downfield. And I think New England could take advantage of him on either K.J. Wright, Bobby Wagner, or a different linebacker, maybe get some big plays out of that.
Yeah, you're right, because, I mean, him coming out of the backfield, and this is why they were able to come back against the Ravens, is because they did. They split them out wide when they were doing that, the ineligible, eligible receiver thing. They split them out wide, and that was kind of a huge distraction. I don't know about distraction is the right word, but a huge kind of, like, thing that defense was keying on was him split out wide, because you're right, as a running back, he is an effective wide receiver, and he probably could play wide receiver for a lot of teams. He could have probably been the number two wide receiver on the Carolina Panthers. So I think that I think you're 100% spot on. I think that's who the Patriots are going to have to go, or I would say, get the most out of in order to beat Seattle. But I don't know if now as a Giants fan, I sort of remember this on the sideline is. What Bill Belichick does a good job of is, you know, make him go to Manningham, make him go to Pasco, keep the ball out of, you know, X, Y, and Z's hands. Now, Percy Harvin leaving Seattle sort of like it eliminated one of their best playmakers. And there's arguments to be made that Percy Harvin leaving, you know, sort of what they were 5-3. And after he left, I think they only lost one game. But Belichick, you know, being the great defensive mind that he is going to do everything he can to sort of marginalize Marshawn Lynch and keep the ball out of Jermaine Curse's hand and sort of let him beat him with Luke Wilson and Doug Baldwin. I mean, do you see anybody on Seattle, you know, kind of a, I don't want to say a surprise guy because I don't know if it's a surprise guy because they don't use a lot of offensive players, I guess. They don't have like a a guy like Shane Vereen that they can use. But I mean, do you think Seattle breaks out Christine Michael in the Super Bowl or something like that? Who's the guy that Belichick's not going to expect that Seattle could use a la Shane Vereen?
I like the point you brought up. I'm glad you brought it up. You know, I think that on paper at least, I can't think of a more juicy matchup for the Patriots defense and the Seattle Seahawks offense as far as you know, when we're talking about elite level teams. I think the Pats D matches up almost perfectly with the Seahawks. I think it's going to be really tough for the Seahawks to do what they want to do on offense. I think last year with when they played Denver, Percy Harvin to me was a difference maker in that Super Bowl. Yeah, you know, Peyton and the offense couldn't get anything going, but Percy early on kind of set the tone and made some big explosive plays, and then of course had a big kickoff after halftime. And I think that now, without him being there, without there really being, you know, at least in my opinion, legit number one and maybe not even a number two level quality NFL receiver on that roster, you know, if I'm Bill Belichick, I'm saying, Revis, you're on Curse or Baldwin, whoever we think is going to hurt us more. Browner, you're on the other one. We're going to load up the box. We're going to do everything we can to slow down Marshawn Lynch in the run game, and we're going to dare him to beat our two, you know, stout corners deep. I just can't see Jermaine Curse may having a big game or having a 38-yard catch, no matter how good a pass it was from Russell Wilson last week against Darrell Revis. I just can't see that. And furthermore, I think another way that really match up well with them is, and I thought Green Bay kind of put this out there as far as what teams can do to slow down Russell Wilson. You know, inside the pocket, I think Russell Wilson is an average to slightly above average quarterback. Outside of the pocket, he all of a sudden becomes, you know, just an amazing player. The guy just has a knack for going out and making the big play. But what Green Bay did that I thought would slow him down was they kind of used Clay Matthews as almost a spy, where sometimes he would rush, sometimes he just stood there, sometimes he just mimicked whatever Russell Wilson was doing. You know, they kind of must rush with their defensive line to force him to stay in the pocket. And when he did get in the pocket, he always had number 52 ready to track him down. And I think the Pats have the perfect guy to do that in Jamie Collins, who, you know, is just a superb athlete coming out of Southern Miss, tore up the combine a few years ago. I'm 99% sure that if they really wanted to replace Aaron Hernandez, they could just flip him to offense, and he would be a hell of a tight end because that's the type of athlete that he is. So I think you use him to spy Russell Wilson. You let him follow around Russell. You make sure he doesn't get out of the pocket. You know, you bring one of your safeties down low to kind of play old school, eight men in the box football and slow down Marshawn Lynch. And you say, look, we think Browner and Revis are a hell of a lot better than Baldwin and Curse. If we're wrong, so be it. But that's how we're going to stake our hat to win this game.
Yeah, and I think that's the name I was going to bring up was Jamie Collins. I agree with you 100% on that because I think that I think that Belichick isn't going to let them beat him with Marshawn Lynch, and I mean he might not have a choice just because Marshawn Lynch is that good, but I their lack of playmaker scares me. And in all honesty, I mean let's be honest, you and I I don't know if you and I talked about it. They really shouldn't even be in the Super Bowl in my opinion. I mean I was kind of amazing that they. Overcame what they overcame, but I think the like you said, the Packers sort of gave him the blueprint on how to beat him and sort of how to exploit Wilson. I mean, you're right, and Jamie Collins is a better athlete than Clay Matthews, and I mean maybe even a better defensive player because. So I don't know. I definitely think that you're spot on with what they need to do to contain Wilson. And keep him in the pocket. And I think calling him a slightly above average quarterback in the pocket might be a bit of an overstatement because I mean, obviously where he shines is obviously his ability to run and make plays on the run but just sitting in the pocket and picking them apart, which is, I think what the Patriots are going to do. And actually we'll get to this at the end, but I think that's why the Patriots are going to win this game. I actually think that they are going to force Wilson to sit back and pick him apart using Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse against, in your and my opinion, the best quarterback in the league. I don't know if your opinion has changed since the last time we talked about Darrell Revis.
Absolutely.
You and I both agree. Yeah. You and I both agree that he's the best corner in the league and one of the three best defensive players in the league. And I don't see it happening. And, I just think Brady might, I think on the flip side, I think Brady is sort of not necessarily going to have an easy time, but I think with a less than 100% Richard Sherman, and Byron Maxwell on the other side there, I think he's going to have a pretty easy time exploiting matchups. I think the Patriots are going to win. I think it's going to be by maybe a touchdown and a field goal. What do you think as far as the outcome of the game? How do you see it going?
Yeah, I like that point you made about, the different matchups for the Pats. And I think what's interesting to me, too, is that, both teams kind of go about their ways differently, where Seattle just is going to leave their guys wherever they're supposed to line up. Richard Sherman always stays on the same side. We don't care who you're putting on the other side. This is how we play our D. We play it straight up. Whereas the Pats are, known notorious for the matchup. So I think that, not only Revis, I think you can just pencil him in for taking one of the two wide receivers out of the game. And I think, another player that could prove to have a pivotal role is Brandon Browner, who, yeah, he gets a lot of flags, but the guy is extremely physical and I think is a solid corner. And I also don't think you should underestimate the fact that he's practiced with these Seattle receivers for the last, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
4 or 5 years. So, he should know pretty much all their moves, what they're trying to do, how they're going to try to attack them. Again, I think that's a real plus matchup for the Pats. And we also know, Bill Belichick's going to move those guys so that, let's say Revis starts on Baldwin and Kearse is having a big game. They're going to put Revis right over on Kearse and switch Browner over to Baldwin, whereas the Seahawks are just going to, this is how we play it. If you beat us, so be it. And I think where the Pats can really take advantage is with Josh McDaniels getting some guys in some, nice advantageous situations. And my question is, if you leave Sherman on the outside the whole game, to me, the cog that sort of makes the receiver group going, I mean, obviously, I think everyone knows that Gronk's their top weapon. But as far as from a wide receiver perspective, I think Julian Edelman's the most important piece to that core. And if, man, you're putting Byron Maxwell, your third corner, on Julian Edelman. I really like that matchup for the Pats. I just think that once you get to the NFL playoffs, it all becomes about matchups. I hated the fact that Denver had to play Indianapolis instead of playing Pittsburgh. If Pittsburgh would have beat Baltimore, I just hated that matchup. And then, similarly, I thought when Indy won and had to go up to New England, New England showed time and time again they match up very well with them. And at least on paper, because, these teams rarely play, even though I know the Pats beat them by a couple points a couple years ago or whatever, who cares? I just think that on paper, the Pats match up better. And even though I think over the long run, the Seahawks might be a better team, I think the Pats are going to get them on Sunday in like a 27-17 type game.
Yeah, that's similar to the score I had in my head too. I had like about that, you know, 34-24, something like that. Because I do think the Patriots are going to be able to put up numbers, and it's just, I think, I mean, to be as simple as possible, I think Gronkowski is going to create matchup nightmares for that defense, and I really think that he's the key. Whether he's catching footballs or he's not catching footballs, I just think that he's going to not necessarily scare him, but he's definitely going to challenge the game plan. He's going to challenge the game plan of the Seattle defense, you know, more than really any other player in the league would, outside of, you know, like Kelvin Johnson or somebody extraordinary like that. I just think that his ability to get open, his ability to catch balls in traffic, just everything that he does, and he's going to be effective in the run game, which we didn't even talk about the Patriots' ability to run the ball now. For whatever reason, the Belichick has he's the LeGarrette Blount whisperer. So I, they could just do that. They could just sit there and play the Seahawks game and just pound the ball with LeGarrette Blount, similar to what the Seahawks are probably going to do with Marshawn Lynch. So I just think that the Patriots, like you said, the matchup wise, and I just think the ability to beat them in so many different ways, where Seattle has only real one way to beat them, and that's just, you know, just shove Marshawn Lynch down their throat. And as great as he is, I just think the Patriots can beat it. I really do, and I don't think this game is going to be as close as a lot of people think. I really think that the Patriots, I don't necessarily, it's not going to be like last year's Super Bowl, but I think it's going to be, I think the best comparison I can think of is similar to the Green Bay Pittsburgh Super Bowl from 4 years ago. I think it's going to be something like that, where the score is going to look close, but the game isn't going to be.
Yeah, I could definitely see, I could definitely see that as well. And, you know, I think that, really, for Seattle, it's going to come down to, you know, one of the top offensive coordinators, in my opinion, in the league, and Daryl Bevel. I think he's going to have to bring out all the smokes and whistles because, again, I just don't think they have the personnel to really take advantage of New England's defense. So, well, you know, but to be fair to Seattle, is they found a way all year long, and Daryl Bevel has just found so many unique ways to maximize the ability of his offense, especially once Percy Harvin left. And,
right.
You know, he had the remember earlier in the year when they're playing Green Bay and they're doing that read option pass that no one really had used yet in the NFL. You know, I think they're going to have a few tricks up their sleeves like that. And then I think really the X factor for Seattle, you know, might be special teams, because Seattle seems, usually I hate to talk about special teams and how much it gets stressed, just because it's simple math and people say it's a third of the game, and that's just simply not true. But that's neither here nor there. The fact of the matter is, last week, the game kind of changed, or 2 weeks ago, the game kind of changed for Seattle on that fake field goal. Last year in the Super Bowl, the nail in the coffin was that Percy Harvin kick return. And even without Percy Harvin, they've still been getting some really nice returns in the kick game, in the punt and kick game. And, you know, I think they have one of the best field goal kickers in the NFL as well. So I think that if they can get a big play out of special teams, or maybe a big, you know, defensive score or some big plays that Daryl Bevel's drawn up, having 2 weeks to prepare, I think it can be a little bit closer than you think. But I think if it's just, you know, a straight up game like that, I think you made a pretty good comparison as far as the Packers Steelers Super Bowl, where, you know, the entire game you kind of knew who was going to win.
You're listening to Out of the Hoodies with Bill Kegel and Brian Shipley. Brian, I want to switch gears here because, like I said a few times, we haven't talked much, you know, some text back and forth, both of us busy guys. I wanted to get your thoughts on Rex Ryan coming to the Bills. I mean, I couldn't be happier. I love Rex Ryan. I thought it was fantastic. And if everybody thought the Bills defense was one of the best in the league last year, oh, wait until they get Kiko Alonso back and Rex Ryan implements his schemes and his system. And I think it's just going to be the most feared defense in the league next year. What do you think, Brian?
Oh, my God. I absolutely love it. You know, I thought the Bills GM, Doug Whaley, summed it up best. When Doug Marrone came in and told the team that he was going to opt out and no longer be the coach, Doug Whaley, who I think everybody around here realizes there's no love lost between him and St. Doug Marrone, that they didn't get along very well. And Doug Whaley told Terry Pegula, you know, we can look at this two ways. We can worry about him not being here, but I look at it as we have a chance to upgrade the Bills, get a better head coach, and, who can help us with our program and move into the next step. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, they interviewed 12 guys, and there's no question in my mind that all 12 guys would have been an upgrade over Doug Marrone. It's almost like a secret, and I thought that his coverage to the media epitomized how little national coverage or how little the national media seems to care about Buffalo and the Bills, because everybody's trying to make it out like, oh, this guy went 9-7 with the Bills. He's the greatest thing to have in the organization in years. He's great. Everybody around here that really closely follows the franchise, sees it day in and day out, I think everybody to a man would argue, no, he was holding the team back. That should have been at least a 10-6 roster. But, you know, this guy was more conservative than Rush Limbaugh on a Wednesday morning. I mean, he was just awful. I mean, his offenses was – I mean, let me just put it this way. Every head coach has some sort of thing they can hang their hat on as their specialization of how they got to be where they are. For Rex Ryan, it was the D-line. You look at the Jets' D-line the past few years, and that was their top strength. Mohammed Wilkerson developed as a late first-round pick. Sheldon Richardson developed as a mid-first-round pick. And a bunch of guys that no one had ever heard of, like Mike DeVito's of the world, they all played really good ball for the Jets, in large part because of Rex's tutelage. Then you look at Doug Marrone, who came up as an O-line coach. That's where he made his bones before.
Oh, God.
You know, getting an opportunity to go to Syracuse. And without question, all five starters, I thought, regressed under his tutelage. They brought in some talented rookies like Cyril Richardson and Cyrus Quandro. Both of them could barely even play at a replacement level. Even like the one like surefire stud that they seemingly had, the left tackle. I'm totally drawing a blank on his name right now. I'm sorry. He regressed after a few couple nice years. I mean, you would think the one place where the Bills would have been stout was O-line. And I think you could make an argument that other than quarterback, that was their worst group on the entire team. So I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but long story short, I think that it's great for Buffalo, great that Rex is here. I think he's going to try to really start changing the national perception of Buffalo because, you know, another thing that you and I and people who live around here know is that Buffalo is undergoing a real renaissance. And I think you're going to see with Rex here, if they start winning, they start doing well, and people start coming here when it's not the middle of a blizzard and people don't see just that, you know, a couple months a year when it's bad. I think you're going to see the Bills maybe become somewhat of a destination like the Steelers and Packers, two other cold weather cities have become. You know, when good veterans want to hop on, get a chance for win a championship, play with Rex and play in a community where it's really going to mean something to win a Super Bowl. So I thought this was honestly the greatest thing of Doug Marrone's tenure as Buffalo Bills coach was his decision to opt out. I mean, what a blessing he gave to the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. You're thinking of Cordy Glenn. That's who you had in your head.
Thank you. I kept thinking of the guy he was most compared to, McNeil, who was formerly a second-round pick of the San Diego Chargers back in the deal.
Sorry, we're a little rusty, Brian. We're just getting back to this. So, but no, 100%, and I agree with you about the Buffalo Renaissance. I mean, if you look at all the construction going on downtown, I mean, St. Pagula has been just, you know, putting the Midas touch on every little thing he touches in this area, and the buzz around here is insane. And that's just before Rex got here. Rex has been in town for the last couple of weeks sampling all the great pizza and chicken wing joints. So it's been fantastic. I'm not even a Bills fan. You know, I'm a diehard Giants fan, and I couldn't be more excited for the Bills season.
It's terrific. And just to clarify, too, for anybody that doesn't know the story, the reason I call him St. Doug Marrone is because this guy had the audacity to say at the beginning of the year that if he helps turn around the Buffalo Bills, he should be canonized as a saint because it's the old Christian belief that you need to work two miracles in order to become be eligible for sainthood. And he was saying that his first miracle is turning around the Syracuse Orange. And again, I know I'm going off on a tangent here, Bill, but just tell me, in what world is it a miracle to make a program, one of the most storied programs in college football history that had some of the greatest college players of all time, such as Jim Brown, Ernie Davis, and many others.
Donovan McNabb, Marvin Harrison.
They were national title contenders within the last 20 years when Donovan McNabb and company were there. They went to a BCS bowl or two when McNabb was there. Like, that is a good, solid program. And he got them to the Pinstripe Bowl. He went 25-25 and got them to the Pinstripe Bowl. What is miraculous about that? I mean, what Turner Gill did to make UB relevant, that's a miracle. What Doug Marrone did at Syracuse, to me, is the minimum prerequisite that someone that is caliber to run an NFL franchise and be a head coach, at the bare minimum to me, you would have to be able to go 25-25 at a place like Syracuse. If you couldn't do that, then why would I ever think that I could hire you to win a Super Bowl for my team?
Do you think when he looks in the mirror and he looks back at his reflection, do you think he sees Chip Kelly? I think he thinks he sees Chip Kelly, which is absurd.
I was as delusional as him. I really do. I really
it would
do.
Be nice, right?
Yeah. I was like, dude, I'm just so great at everything. There's so many idiots in the world that just don't understand my genius, you know? Like,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, yeah. Just,
but hey, enjoy being the old line coach down in Jacksonville, Doug. Seriously, really, really enjoy it. And I feel bad for Luke Jackal because by all accounts, he's a terrific young man, and his career is about to fall off the cliff.
Oh, my God. Gus Bradley might have just got fired. But they also hired Nathaniel Hackett to be their quarterback coach, so there you go. Which, you know, my opinion is a little different on Nathaniel Hackett than most of Buffalo. I actually think Doug Marrone might have held him back, but what do I know? Because he just signed there as a quarterback coach, so maybe Doug Marrone cut him off a piece of that $4 million he got to leave. Which
you know,
I'm sure
you.
Yeah.
He might have, but like from Jacksonville's standpoint, and I love Gus Bradley, love him. But who the hell watched the Bills last year? And were like, if any of these offensive coaches become available, we really need to add them to our staff. I mean, the Bills took offensive football back about 25 years with the systems they ran last year. They had one of the most explosive, dynamic playmakers to come in the league in years. Had no idea how to use them. Like, why would you be so desperate to have these people to your staff? I just don't get it. And I thought you made a good point about him giving a piece of the $4 million buyout he got from the Bills to Nate Hackett. Because you know what? If Doug Marrone never does get a head coaching job again, no assistant that has a menu of options to choose from in their right mind should ever want to go work for that dude. Because when he opted out and got his $4 million and quit, all those dudes who everybody knows that NFL assistants or college assistants are all attached to the hip with their head coach until they get their own head coaching job. And he left them all hung out to dry with no job, no security, no stability, and just hung in limbo while the Bills, correctly I might add, did their due diligence and interviewed as many candidates as possible. And now it's like even a guy like Jim Schwartz, who, yeah, he doesn't need the money and he's got a big name, he'll get another good job, but still it's like, man, I had a good thing going here, and the guy that I signed up to work with just totally stabbed me in the back, and I'm out of work right now. Like, and then you go down the list, tight ends coach, assistant offensive line coaches. All these guys just got totally screwed by him, and yet the media makes it out to be like, oh, well, he got his $4 million, and he might get a head coaching job next year, so he did a smart thing. Well, you know what? Loyalty still does matter to me, and I would never work for that guy if I had another option.
And how bad must his interview with the Jets have went? Because, like, reputable sources like Adam Schefter and Jake Glazer were saying, like, oh, you know, Doug Marrone, the head coach of the Jets, is, you know, pretty much a done deal. And then they interview him, and it's like, Jets no longer considering Doug Marrone. It's like, what did he do? Like, that was real quick. And then they hired, which I thought was a great move, because other than Rex, I thought he was the second-best head coaching candidate. And Todd Bowles from Arizona, I love that guy. And I like him because he's, you know, Bruce Arians has total control of that offense, all right? And he just lets Bowles do whatever with the defense. And that defense has been, I don't want to say overachieving, but been fantastic under his watch, you know, the last couple of seasons. So I think that was a really smart move by the Jets. I really liked it. I think that he's going to do a great job, unfortunately. Hopefully not that great, so he's not you know, beating up on the Bills for the next decade.
I would agree that was a good hire, and you're right. I think you can say overachieved because, you know, the start of the year last year, they lost their, you know, really to me, three of their best defensive players with Darnell Dockett, Darrell Washington, and I'm trying to think, they lost someone else too, and you know, they were
Lost Calais Campbell for part of the year this season, too.
Yeah, Lost Calais Campbell for part of the year. And plus, you know, sometimes defense relies so much on their offense to put them in good spots or to, you know, have extended drives to kind of limit their exposure out on the field. And my God, man, they had to play defense when you know, the Ryan Lindley's of the world were playing quarterback for their team. I mean, that's tough. You basically have to pitch a shutout to even have a chance. And,
yeah,
you know, I really thought they did do a really nice job.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that's what the Bills are going to have to do this year. I don't see that offense. I wasn't a fan of the Greg Roman hiring. I don't know how you felt about it, but I think that I don't know if it's Jim Harbaugh just checking out, but Kaepernick's regression, I think was you know, I don't know if you can put it all on Harbaugh. I put most of it on Harbaugh, but Greg Roman was there, and I don't know if he could have done anything else. I mean, not knowing the ins and outs of that situation, I can't really say anything educated about it. All I know is what I saw, and I saw a quarterback that stopped running and was forced to be a pocket passer when he's not. And I just kind of hope that, you know, there's a salvageable EJ Manuel, you know, something in the future, because I think that he has the right attitude. He's not a dumb guy at all. I just really hope that he's put in a position, and I'm just hoping that it was the Doug Marrone era that sort of screwed him, not necessarily him screwing him, because I don't know if anybody could have succeeded in that offense. I mean, outside of, you know, an elite level talent, let alone a, you know, I don't want to say an average talent, but I think there is a lot there with Manuel, but yeah. What do you think about Greg Roman?
Well, I think all that you just said is totally fair. I really do. But I actually did like the hire. You know, I think the part of Colin Kaepernick, and I will admit I'm kind of a Colin Kaepernick apologist because I liked him coming out of college. I've always kind of liked him. But I thought that last year the 49ers had probably the most overrated or overvalued talent around them in the NFL. I thought that they had a bunch of big names like Anquan Boldin, Michael Crabtree, Stevie Johnson. And the problem to me was I think that's all the same exact wide receiver at the stages in their respective careers, which is solid if as long as you're using this role, which is the possession receiver, come up big on third downs, you know, catch your slants when you need it, do this and that. And I just didn't think they had very good receivers to complement that as far as, you know, vertical threats, guys that get downfield, explosive playmakers, guys that you can just throw it up to and let them go win a jump ball, although I guess Anquan Boldin kind of can still do that. But I just thought the talent around him wasn't very good. You know, Vernon Davis was hurt for a lot of the year, and they didn't utilize him properly. I shouldn't say that. They didn't utilize him enough in the passing game, which could very well have been Colin Kaepernick's fault because, you know, you watch some of the film and he was still getting open. I think that talk of Vernon Davis' demise is not true. But all around, you know, I just think that San Francisco didn't have as much offensive weapons to work with as we might have thought they did last year. So I feel like he's upgrading at every single, pretty much every receiver position, where you're going from some of these older, slower veterans to young, explosive athletes like Sammy Watkins, you know, Robert Woods, if they were able to re-sign C.J. Spiller out of the backfield. You know, I think that, you know, he has an opportunity to do good things, and I think he can. He's the type of guy that can build a system around EJ, which is just nice, easy, simple reads. Is EJ going to be a Hall of Famer? Probably not, but I think they can make him into a competent NFL quarterback that can do enough to win games with that, you know, terrific defense, which should be even better under Rex Ryan.
Yeah, and I mean, let's not forget that Russell Wilson isn't exactly, you know, he's not. Yeah, he's not Andrew Luck as far as a passer goes, as far as a quarterback.
Right.
And not saying that EJ Manuel is quite Russell Wilson, but Russell Wilson is smart in that he knows his left and right limit. He knows as far as he can go. He doesn't try to do anything outside of himself unless it's called upon. And he's in the Super Bowl. Same thing with Kaepernick. You know, when he was, you know, this previous 3 years when he was making it to at least the NFC Championship, played within himself. So I should say previous 2 years, because the first year San Francisco was in there with Smith, I apologize. But yeah, it's just that defense what last year was a championship caliber defense. It's just the offense was a, you know, mid-level Division I offense. So I really think the talent's there for Buffalo. I think that, at least on defense, I mean, to keep them in games, regardless of what they do on offense, I mean, I think the running back position is something they're definitely going to have to address. Because I think CJ Spiller is going to the Jets, and I may be naive, and I might be the only one that sort of sees that train going, but I think he's going to go to the Jets and play for Chan Gailey, where he had his best years. So, but that's just me. Yeah,
that makes sense, and you know, I think that should be, you know, there's a lot of good backs coming out in the draft this year, and you know, who knows, maybe. If they get Bryce Brown, I mean, it's easy to forget that Bryce Brown is the same age as most of the guys that are going to be entering the NFL this year. I think he's only 23 years old. Like,
yeah, he's really young.
I mean, and he's a first-round type athlete. I'm not saying he's a first-round type player yet because, you know, he tends to try to always break everything outside. But, you know, if I'm an offensive coordinator or running backs coach, that's the exact type of guy I want to get my hands on and see if I can mold him into something special. And I also know for a fact Doug Whaley said that in large part the reason they're willing to give a fourth-round pick for him is because they saw, and I'm quoting him here, superstar potential in him. So he could be an answer on the roster, but you're right. I mean, Freddie Jackson needs to be a complimentary, you know, locker room mentor at this point. I think you're probably right with CJ. You made a good point that, you know, it makes sense for him to reunite with, you know, the coach you had the most success with, and he'd be a nice compliment to Chris Ivory in New York. So, really, to me, it's Bryce Brown bringing a rookie. You know, maybe a guy like Todd Gurley could fall to him in the second round, something like that. Not that they necessarily want to spend that high a pick on a guy, but they were willing last year. They tried desperately to trade ahead to select Carlos Hyde from Ohio State. So, I think, you know, based upon that fact and the fact that you have a fourth-round pick for Bryce Brown, I think it's fair to say they probably value the running back position more highly than other teams like, you know, a Mike Shanahan-led organization would, or, you know, a Gary Kubiak-led organization, Broncos would. So I could see him investing heavily in the running back spot, like you said, and really trying to make it a run-first offense, which is, you know, both Roman and Rex Ryan's calling card.
Yep, and the next show you and I do together, we will get into the draft, and that's your area of expertise. We're going to try to get Mike on, and we're going to try to find a NFL draft expert that gets paid to do it for a living. So not that we don't already have one. I mean, ESPN has their version of Brian Shipley, but we have the actual Brian Shipley, and that's all that matters. So but all right, Brian, that's it for today's show. Thanks for coming on, man. I mean, we're gonna try to do this as regularly as possible. You and I both busy fellas. I got a little one on the way, so it's, you know, my life's getting a little more hectic, and I'm sure it's going to the hectic level.
I got a fifth-grade basketball championship to win. So.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, but we're going to try to do it as much as possible. Next time that you hear both of our voices on the show, we will be talking NFL draft. So look forward to that, and that's our show. It was good talking to you, Brian. I mean, I hope for an exciting Super Bowl. I'm sure we'll be texting back and forth during the game, and look forward to doing it again.
Sure thing. Sounds good. Thanks, Bill.
Hey, no problem, Brian. Have a good one.
All right, buddy. See ya.
See ya. That was the Under the Hoodies show with Bill Kegel and Brian Shipley. Talked a little Super Bowl there. I think we both had some about the same opinions on most things, which I got to start bringing in people that I disagree with because, you know, it's not really compelling when the two guys get along, but it's compelling when you got Brian Shipley. The guy is good. The guy knows a ton. And if you like what you heard today, I mean, just wait till the draft and we unleash the full Brian Shipley on everybody. It's going to be fantastic. So, remember every Wednesday, between 7 and 7:30 is when we're going to start. Most of the shows are done for archives, but if you want to listen to live, every Wednesday, most times it's going to be 7, but we couldn't get Brian until 7:30. And, going forward, we're going to try to have some guests on, some guys from the NFL. A couple weeks ago, we had a guy from, Fox Sports football show, John Zarnetsky, writer for FoxSports.com. Like I said, we're going to try to go forward having guests like that. So make sure you go to BackSportsPage.com, follow me on Twitter at Bill Kegel, and listen to the show every Wednesday. Thanks.